Masechet Baba Kama, Daf Samech Aleph. We begin with somewhat strange but very fascinating and deep Agadah. The Agadah is about the following Pesukim in Shemuel Bet, chapter 23. This section is delineating the heroes, the great mighty men that served and fought under David HaMelech. It lists three different people. One of them is Shama ben Ageh Harari. And it says about him that the Pilishtim gathered in a troop, and there was a piece of ground, Vetihisham Chelkata Sadeh Melea Adashim, that was full of lentils, and all the people, Bnei Israel, fled from Pilishtim. This seems to be a strange detail. Why does it matter that the Pilishtim were gathered in an area that was full of lentils? Furthermore, in the parallel of this story in Divrei Hayamim, instead of lentils, it says a field full of barley. So that's going to be one point of discussion in the following Gemara. And it says, Vayitaseh betoch al-chelka vayasileha. He, this Shama, stood in the midst of the ground and defended it. Vayachat ha-pilishtim and sulu pilishtim, vayasnam teshu'ah gedolah, and the Hashem gave them a great victory. So we're going to see, what does this mean? Also, we're going to be reading these in a agadic and metaphorical way. Vayeredu shelosha me'ashelosim rosh ha'boel kasir David mata adulam. Okay, so then they went down. They came to David, the various heroes. VeDavid az b'mesuda, David's in a fortress, and the garrison of Pilishtim was in Bet Lechem. Veitaved David vayomar. This is the part of the story that we're going to actually start with this in the analysis of this Agadah. Mi yashkeni mai mi bor bet lechem asher bashar. Since the Pilishtim had taken over Bet Lechem, David said, I wish someone would give me water from the well in Bet Lechem. In other words, he's wishing that he could go and reconquer Bet Lechem and have the delicious water there that's by the gate. The well that's by the gate of Bet Lechem. And sure enough, Vayib Ke'u Shelosha Tegiborim B'machane Pilishtim. So these three heroes must have heard David say that, and they said, okay, we're going to do it. We're going to be heroes, and we're going to go against all these Pilishtim. And they were able to break through the camp of Pilishtim. And they went, Vayishavu Mayim Ibor Bet Lechem. They drew water from that well in Bet Lechem, Asher Bashah, that's near the gate. Vayisuvei Abuel David, they brought it to David. So it sounds like they did a fantastic thing. David would be so happy. Wow, you did this for me. However, However, David says, no, I'm not going to drink this. He poured it out to God. Why? Vayomer halila li Adonai me'asoti zot hadam anashim ha'olchim b'nafshotam v'lo ha'ba lishtotam ele asu shelosha tegiborim. He says, far be it from me that I should do this. This is the blood of men that risked their lives. In other words, I was saying, yeah, I wish we could get that water. But now they risked their lives to do this, to get me just a cup of water. I cannot benefit from this small material gain here of having a cup of water that people risked their lives to do. It was not proper to risk their lives, and I don't want to set that as a precedent that people should risk their lives for such things. Therefore, I'm not going to be, personally benefit from people potentially losing their lives for my personal benefit. And so this shows a righteous act of David, recognizing the great sacrifice of these heroes. Okay, the Gemara is going to read this in an allegorical way. It says, when David says, who would give me water? It's not talking about actual water, but rather Torah. He was asking a halachic question. And then we're going to see, what was the halachic question? We're going to see three different possibilities. So we quote the Pesukim that we just discussed. David asked for water, and these three heroes went and they got him water. What was the question that David was asking that he said, I need Torah, I need someone to answer my halachic question?
Tamun ba'esh kami ba'yale, I kere bi'uda, I kere banan, upashtule ma de pashtule.
David's question was about the topic we've been discussing above, whether something that's hidden and then is consumed by fire, does the owner of the fire have to pay? Well, we know the owner of the fire who lets it go negligently has to pay for something that is seen, that's revealed, but something underneath, does he have to pay for that? Is halacha like Rabbi Yehuda, who says, yes, you have to pay also for things concealed, or is it like Rabbanan that someone who causes fire damage by fire does not have to pay for things concealed? That was his question, and he sent it to the question to the sages who were in Bethlehem, and they sent him back an answer. It doesn't record what the answer is. It would have been either, whatever, according to the Biuda or according to the Banan, they sent back a tradition of what it was. Rav Huna Amar, that's one opinion. Second opinion, according to Rav Huna, notice we're going backwards in time, actually. Rav is later than Rav Huna. Gedishim disorim disrael havu, tavu metamere pelishtim behu, vekami bayale, maulasilasmo bemamon haverom. There were stacks of barley. Notice this is barley here, even though the Pasuk in Shmuel says lentils, because it says barley in Divrei Hayamim. We're going to come back to this point later. So there were Jewish-owned stacks of barley, but the Pilishti enemies were hiding inside these stacks of grain. And David's question was, can I save myself at the cost of the property of another? In other words, I'm going to go and I'm going to burn down or, you know, drop an explosive or something down on this pile of grain, and it will kill the Pilishti enemy. That's good. But it's also going to destroy the property of a Jew. So am I allowed to do that? And they sent back, they said, no, you cannot allow. You're allowed to kill your enemy. He's threatening to kill you, but you have no right to go and destroy someone else's property. However, they said, that's the general rule that applies to other people. But you, King David, you are a king, and a king has a right of eminent domain. He can make a breach in any fence to make a path for himself, and no one can stop him. And therefore, all property is under your control, and you are allowed to do that. Incidentally, the halakha is not what they answer. Halakha is that one is allowed to save himself by the property of the other, but you just have to pay for that property that you end up destroying in the course of saving yourself. But, you know, this is not, destroying property is not one of the big three. So if your life is in danger, you are certainly allowed to take other people's property in order to save yourself. If you have to, you know, run away from a murderer and you have to steal someone's car. You can steal someone's car, but you still have to pay for them afterwards. Anyway, they said that it's permitted to you, David HaMelech. Okay, that's all the second opinion. The third explanation, V'rabanan vitem adaba bar mari amru, gedishim disorim disrael havu, ugdishim da'adashim depilishtim. Here's what the situation was. There were stacks of barley that belonged to Jews, and there were also stacks of lentils that belonged to Pilishtim. That explains the two different pesukim. Vekami ba'yalehum ha'li to gidishim shal seorim di Yisrael iten lefana lifne behem to amanat ha'shalim gidishim shal adashim de Pilishtim. King David had a lot of animals and needed to feed them. So the question he was asking was, is he allowed to take by force the barley that belonged to the Jews so that he can feed his animals with it, and on condition that when he eventually conquered the Pilishtim, then he would take their lentils and give them to the Jews as to repay them for the barley he took. So he's going to take this temporarily, but then he's going to pay them back. Is that permitted? And they answered, the sages of Bethlehem, Shalachule, Havol, Yashib, Rasha, Gezela, Yeshalem. They answered Pasuk in Yechezkel. Of course, Yechezkel lived many centuries after David HaMelech, but this is that we're not meant to be taking this all literally anyway. And the Pasuk in Yechezkel actually is a positive Pasuk. It says, if a wicked person, he steals and all that, but then he restores the pledge. He gives back what he took by robbery. And he goes in the statutes of life and he doesn't do sins anymore. He will live and he shall not die. So the simple reading is actually about a Rasha who does Teshuvah, so he will get good. But this Midrash is taking it out of context and saying, someone who steals and then gives back, right? He steals this, I'm going to steal now, but I'll pay you back later. That person is called a Rasha. Afa pishe gezela mishalem, Rasha, who, even though he's paying back what he stole, still he's called a Rasha for stealing in the first place. So generally, no, you cannot take something from someone, even though you have in mind that and you are sincere that you will pay back something else later, you still can't just go and steal someone's stuff.
אבל אתה מלך אתה ופורס מלך פורס לעשות לא דרך ואין מוכין בידו.
However, that applies to my other people. You are a king. You have eminent domain. You can make a breach and offense and make a path for yourself through anybody's field, and no one can stop you. So therefore, you are allowed.
That's the three different interpretations of when David said he was looking for water. These were the three questions he might have been asking. Now let's compare them. Bishlam alamanda amar la'ach lufe.
We understand, according to one who was asking about exchanging the barley for the lentils later.
Hanu dichtiv chad kera v'ati sham chelkat asedem el adashim. Uchtiv achad kera v'ati chelkat asedem el'a se'orim.
Then we understand the difference between the pasuk in Shemuel that says that the Pilishtim were in a field full of lentils, and the one in David Amim that says, no, it was a field full of barley. It was both. There was two different fields, one of barley, one of lentils, one belonging to Jews and one belonging to the Pilishtim. And then the question was, can I take the barley now and pay them back with lentils after they win the war?
Ela namad amad limikle mai baya lehu lahani tere kerae.
But according to the other opinion, who said he wanted to know, am I allowed to burn down the stacks of barley belonging to Jews in order to kill the Pilishti enemies that are in there and save my life thereby? According to that, why are there two different pesukim, one about barley and one with lentils?
Amalach dehavu name gedishim dadashim disrael dehavu mitammeru behu Pilishtim.
And the answer to that one is, there were both. There was piles of barley and also piles of lentils. Both of them belonged to Jews, and Pilishtim were hiding in both of them. And so that's why one happens to be Shemuel says lentils, and David Amim says barley, but in fact, there were both types, and that's why it says both.
Bishlam aleman de amad lemikle, hanu dichtiv ayitiyase betoch achelka vayasileha. Ela leman de amad laachlufe, mai vayasileha.
Now, according to the one who says the question was, can he burn down the stacks with the enemies in it? That's why it says that he stood in the middle of them and he saved it. What does it mean he saved it? That either Shama, the hero, or David, through his decision, decided not to follow the leniency that the sages of Bethlehem gave him. And they said, oh, you're a king, you could do it. He says, no, I don't want to be above the law. I don't want to do that. I am not going to burn down this grain just to kill the Pilishtim. I'm going to keep the grain. So he saved the grain, and he managed to kill the Pilishtim anyway. He got them out of the grain, then he killed them separately, but he didn't destroy the grain. So that's what it means, that he saved it. But according to the one that he was asking, can we exchange the lentils for the barley that he's going to take now, what does it mean that he saved it? It means that King David said, no, I'm not going to, also, I'm not going to rely on the leniency, even though the sages says, you're a king, you could take whatever you want. King David said, I want to be above any suspicion. I want to be totally moral, and therefore I'm not going to even rely on that leniency of eminent domain to take barley that's not mine, even though I promised to repay it with lentils. I'm not going to take the barley. I'll find another way to feed my animals. And that's what it means, that he saved it. Now, according to those two interpretations, we understand why there's two pesukim, one about lentils and one about barley. But according to the first interpretation, he's asking, do you have to pay for concealed items that are damaged by fire? So then why do you need this two pesukim about lentils and barley?
Amalach tamun v'hada mehanach kami ba'yale.
That first response, that was Rava, he would have no way to explaining this, the difference between the two pesukim. So we have to say that David was actually asking two questions. First, it was asking about concealed damage, and it was also asking about one of the other two. You might pick one. Either one would be able to explain the existence of that contradiction between pesukim.
Bishlam aleman damar hani tarteh, hanu dichtiv lo avad David lishtotam, amar kevan deika isura la nichali.
We understand now afterwards, where it says David did not want to drink them. That means he did not want to accept the answer that was given to him. According to those other two, the second two options, we understand because it was a prohibition. King David said, I don't want to go against the prohibition, even though they gave me a leniency, it's a loophole because I'm king. No, but fundamentally it's prohibited. I am not going to drink the water, meaning I am not going to use the leniency that they gave me. But according to the first opinion about concealed items that are damaged by fire, they sent him back a tradition. They sent him back, we learned halacha is like this. So how come he didn't want to drink them? He wasn't violating a prohibition. They didn't give him an exception. They told him. Whatever the answer is. So what was the problem? Let's say they said, you don't have to pay. So fine. So then he doesn't have to pay. It's not a special leniency. So why does it say that he didn't want to drink them? The answer is he did accept. He accepted their halacha, whatever they said, but he didn't say it in their names. Now, usually you're supposed to say something in the name of the person who you heard it from, right? Anyone who says quotes something and name that they heard it from, mevi geula la olam. So you're supposed to do that. But here he said, David HaMelech said, listen, I have a tradition, this is the halacha, and he didn't quote it in the name of the sages in Bethlehem. Why? Amar kach mekublani mebeti. No, he didn't say it in the name of the heroes that went in there to get it. Amar kach mekublani mebeti no shel Shmuel Ramati kol maser asmol amut al divrei Torah en omrim devar halacha mishemo. So David the Melech says, I have a tradition from the Betin of Shmuel the prophet. And interesting, we had a couple of dapim ago Shmuel the Navi, Shmuel the Amora and his Betin. But this is Shmuel HaRamati from the Navi, who was in fact before David. And he says, I have a tradition from him. At anyone who hands himself over to die, who risks his life for Torah, you expect it to say it's a great thing that he risked his life for Torah, but it's saying it's not. We do not quote him by name. We do not transmit a halacha in his name. In other words, we do not want to encourage people to risk their lives for Divrei Torah. As great, as important as Torah is, if we would quote a halacha, this was saying this in the name of so-and-so who martyred himself to get this Divrei Torah, then other people say, that's a great thing. You should go and put yourself in danger in order to learn Torah. But we don't want that. Of course you have to learn Torah, but we don't want people to put themselves into danger in order to do it. And therefore, David HaMelech said, I'm not quoting in the name. That's what it means. I didn't want to drink it, which fits the context there, right? I don't want to benefit from something that people gave their blood for, gave their lives for. And so he quoted it anonymously. Very interesting and deep and important. Of course, there are exceptions to this. We quote words halachot from Rabbi Akiva, who martyred himself for Torah. There are certain exceptions to this rule who were outstanding heroes. Maybe there was a whole war in that case, the Bar Kokhba revolt, which was very famous and a significant thing. But in general, individuals who risk their lives when it's not necessary, this is not something to be modeled. Vayasech otam lahashem bishlam alman damad hanetarte mishum da'abad l'shem shamayim. Now then it says that he poured this water out to Hashem, which again, the water just means the divrei Torah. So we understand according to the other two options, the second two, that doesn't mean that he poured them to Hashem. It means that he did something l'shem shamayim. He says, listen, it's fundamentally prohibited. I'm not going to follow the loophole leniency. And that's what it means that he dedicated himself and poured those answers towards Hashem, meaning he made a decision to follow l'shem shamayim and be prohibited. Elamand amar tamun ba'esh, mai vayasech otam l'Hashem, tamrinu mishma de gemara. But according to the one who says that he was asking about whether a concealed item you have to pay for when it's damaged by fire, what does it mean that he devoted the water, devoted the decision to Hashem? It means that he quoted it as a tradition, as a stamp tradition, without associating the names of the specific individuals who risked their lives to bring him those answers. Very fascinating, deep and important Agada. The next couple of Mishnayot are going to talk about the minimum safeguards one is required to put if you're making a fire. Avra gadeh shehu gavoa 400 o derech harabim o nahar patur. If I make a fire in a private protected area, as long as there is a fence that's at least 4 amot high from where I am to a neighbor's property, it's safe. Or there's a public thoroughfare in between, or there's a river in between. In all these cases, if my fire gets out of hand and is able to jump over that fence or go over the big road or go over the river, I am exempt. This is an unusual thing. I took proper precautions by having my fire this amount of distance or with a wall in between.
Hold on, we have a braita that seems to say the opposite, that if there was a fence between my fire and the neighbor's property that was 4 amot high, then I am liable. But this Mishnah said, patur. How can we explain this contradiction?
Amara papa tanadi dan kachashim lema'ala lemata. 6 amot patur, 5 amot patur, ad 4 amot patur. Tana bara milemata lema'ala kachashim shete amot hayab, 3 amot hayab, ad 4 amot hayab. The papa says actually there's no contradiction between the two. They're saying the same thing, just in different ways, depending on where your starting point is and whether you're counting down or up. Our Mishnah is assuming you're counting from above to below. If you have a very tall fence, let's say it's 6 amot, and it goes over the fence, you're not liable. 5 amot, also not liable. Even 4 amot, you're not liable. But that's the minimum height that you need when you're counting from above. However, Tana Bara, the Baraita, this is Baraita, the word Baraita comes from here. Bara, meaning the transmitter of the outside tradition, this Braita here, is counting from below to above, starting at 0. If you go a small wall, 2 amot, not good enough, you will be liable. If you had a fence that was only 3 amot, not good, not high enough, not enough protection, you're still liable. You are liable until you get to 4 amot. 4 amot is the minimum that you need counting from below in order to be not liable anymore, as long as it's 4 amot by itself, yeah, but any as long as it's at least 4 amot, you would be patur. So you see, they're really saying the same thing, just depending on how you are counting. Amar Rava, 4 amot shamru de patur afilu biste kosim. When we say that you have to have a fence at least 4 amot high, that's true even if the neighboring field is thorns. Thorns are very flammable. Nevertheless, 4 amot would be sufficient. Papa says when you're counting 4 amot, it doesn't mean from the ground level, but rather 4 amot higher than the highest tip of the thorns. Because if you have thorns that are very high, or if you have a pile of wood that's very high up, so then the fire can be higher than 4 amot, and the thorns can also be higher than 4 amot. So Tosafot over here says that also if the fire is high, the wall has to be 4 amot higher than the height of the flames. Okay, we hear the Papa is saying, so you need 4 amot higher than the top of the thorns. Amar Rav, lo shenu ela be kolachat, aval benichpefet, afilo ad me'a ama hayav. Rav says that this Mishnah that says if it's a 4 amot or that a public road or a river that is in between, then you are patur. That's only if we're talking about a fire that is like a stick going straight up, a vertical fire that is straight up and down. But if it's a bent over fire, meaning if there's some wind or something that's causing the fire to be bent over and therefore is moving, then even 100 amot between where you make the fire and the neighbor would not be good. It will cross over a wall, it will go over a public road, and not good enough. So it has to be a standing fire staying in one place in order for these safeguards to be sufficient. So that's Shmuel's adding a chumrah here. Shmuel says, no, the Mishnah is talking about a bent over fire, a fire that's moving. That's why you need this fence or some space in between. But if it's just standing straight and not moving, then actually you wouldn't need anything. Just a small low fence or a little bit of space in between is not moving anywhere. So then that would be sufficient. So Shmuel is much more lenient. Tanya kivate, we have a braita that supports Rabba. When do we say that one is not liable if he has this fence? When it's staying in one place and is standing up straight. But if the fire is bent over and there's also fuel, there are branches that are nearby that it can travel over those branches, and it's bending over, then afilu ad mea mil hayav, then even 100 miles. Rav actually only said mea ama. Here it says 100 mil, although the Braita is actually adding in also that there's fuel in between. So then there of course is going to spread, and you have to see that, and you are liable. Avra nahar o shelulit shehem rehabim shemone as amot patu. The Braita adds that if there is a river between, or shulit, we're going to discuss this word more, as some kind of pool of water, and it's 18 amot wide, then that one is exempt. It seems that one be exempt no matter what kind of fire it is. Now, derech harabim, back to the Mishnah that said a public thoroughfare is good enough as a block to the fire. It won't go over that much space. Mantana, who is the author of this Mishnah? Amarava Rabbi Eliezer, he did not. Rabbi Eliezer omer, shesh asre amot kederech reshut harabim patur. Our Mishnah must be the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer, who says in the very next Mishnah we're about to learn, there's a four-way machloket about how wide some space has to be to stop a fire. And Rabbi Eliezer is the opinion that says 16 amot, which is the width of a public domain. This is the width of the Mahane Israel when they traveled through the desert and they had wagons and stuff. So it had to be 16 amot. And this is also the definition, which is a very important definition nowadays, to assess what is a reshut harabim deoraita for the purposes of, for example, an eruv. And how can you make an eruv if there's a highway that's 16 amot or bigger? So all this comes to Rabbi Eliezer. So anyway, he says, when it says derech harabim, we use the definition of Rabbi Eliezer, and so he is the author of the Mishnah. Okay, O Nahar, the Mishnah also said a river. What do you mean a river? Rav Amar Nahar Mamash Shmuel Amar Arita De Dala'e. Rav says an actual river, where Shmuel says even a water channel, which is much smaller. Manda Amar Nahar Mamash Afagab Deleka Maya. Now Rav, who says we need an actual river, even if there's no water in the river, the point is it's a big wide riverbed or wide, and therefore be difficult for the fire to get over it. Shmuel, who says even a water channel might just be one ama across. And so in that case, we assume it has to be talking about that it is full of water. It's the water that will stop the fire from spreading. But if there's no water, then that's not a very big space, and the fire will be able to get across it. Tenan hatam. There's a Mishnah in Pe'ah. Elu hen mafsikin la Pe'ah. Hanachal vashilulit v'derech hayachid v'derech harabim. So we were talking about blockages for fire, but there's another place where we are thinking about divisions for a field, and that's in the laws of Pe'ah. The law is that every field, you have to leave a corner of it for the poor. Now, each field has to have its own pe'ah. If you have two different fields, let's say in two different places, you can't leave a big corner of this field that will cover the other field. No, every field needs its own. Now, let's say you have a big field, but there's a stream that's passing through it. So this Mishnah says a stream is considered a division, and therefore you'd need separate corners to leave, separate pe'ot for each one. Also a shilulit, which we'll define, and a private road or a public thoroughfare. If it's going through your field, that divides the field into two, and you have to leave separate peot. My shelulit. What is a shelulit? Amar Rav Yehuda, amar Shmuel. Makom shemegeshamim sholelim sham. Rabbi Vai amar Rabbi Yochanan, amat amayim shemehaleket shalal agapeha. Rav Yehuda says name of Shmuel. It means a place where rainwater gathers. Sholim meaning gathers. So it's some kind of ditch or pool of water in the middle of a field. And Rav Bevai says, name of Rabbi Yochanan, says it means a water channel that takes its spoils, right, the richness of the source of the water, and it brings it to the banks all around as to fill up cisterns and other places. So it's a water channel. If you say like Shmuel, that means a pool of water or a ditch that gathers the rainwater, then, and that is a separation between two fields, so that you have to have a pe'ah from each, all the more so if it's a water channel, because that's much longer and a permanent thing, so that will for surely be a division of the field. But if the opinion of Rabbi Yochanan that says it's a water channel across the field that is a division, he would say that only. But if it's just a ditch that has a lot of rainwater, that is not considered a division of the field into two. Danhu bagne dara mikru, because those pools are called the pools of a land. Like, you know, if you're describing a land, oh, this land has a bunch of ditches in it, some pools, but that's just considered part of the landscape of the field. It's not considered a division into two different parts. The next Mishnah continues with the same topic and asks, "Hamadlik betoch shelo ad kama ta'abora deleka." If I'm lighting a field in my own property, and let's say there's no river and no fence, but I'm going to leave a lot of space, just empty space, not public thoroughfare either, but empty space in my own land, how much do I have to leave? Something that this Mishnah is arguing on the previous Mishnah, because that one already said that if you leave a space of Reshut Harabim. But some say this is in agreement with it, and there's a difference between Reshut Harabim and a river and a fence, which are blockages, and just empty space on my land. How much space do I have to leave all around in order to ensure that my neighbors are protected and I would not be liable if my fire that I did in the middle of my land would spread? Rabbi Eliezer ben Azariah omer, ino tokilu hu ba'emsa bet kor. So Rabbi Eliezer ben Azariah says, we measure it as if it was in the middle of a bet kor. If a bet kor is a large piece of land, and from the middle of it to an edge is 137 amot. So as long as the fire is 137 amot away from any of its neighbors, then I can presume I am safe, and I would not be liable if it somehow spread more than that. Rabbi Eliezer omer shesh asra amot kederech shut harabim. Rabbi Eliezer, who we just quoted above, says, no, all you need, 137, 16 amot is enough, because that's the size of Reshut Harabim. That's why the Gemara said before, that since before it said Reshut Harabim, so the Mishnah before is in agreement with Rabbi Eliezer, and therefore in disagreement with the other opinions. Rabbi Akiva omer hamishim amma. Rabbi Akiva says it's 50 amot. Okay, he was between 137 and 16, he says 50. And last opinion, Rabbi Shimon omer, Shalem yeshalem amabrir et ha-be'era, hakol lefi ha-deleka. Rabbi Shimon says, Shalem yeshalem, double language, that comes to be inclusive and very machmir, and says, it all depends on the size of the fire. What exactly does Rabbi Shimon mean is what we're about to discuss. Right now, we're assuming he means that you have to pay no matter what, no matter how much space you leave, if it ends up spreading, you are liable. Okay, so we ask, is that true? Rabbi Shimon has no maximum, no matter how much, if I put 100 miles in between my fire but some and something else, but somehow it goes over that, then I'm still liable? Does Rabbi Shimon have no maximum? We have a Mishnah in Baba Batra that says the opposite. But first it has Tanakama, which seems to agree that there is no maximum, but then Rabbi Shimon is more lenient. Lo yamid adam tanur betoch habayit, ela imken yesh lo al gabo יש על גבו גובה דארבע אמות. היה מדובר ליד שהיא תחתה מעזיבה שלושה טבחים, ובקירה טפח, ואם הזיק משלם מה שהזיק. A person should not put an oven in his house unless he has four amot of space between the top of the oven and the ceiling. Right? Nowadays also, building codes require you to have a vent on top of a stove, on top of an oven. So you have to have space so that your roof doesn't catch on fire. And if you put the oven on the second floor, then you have to make sure that there is at least 3 tefachim, 9-10 inches of plaster under the oven, right? So that it doesn't burn a hole through the floor of where the oven is sitting on. Well, now if it's a kira is a stove which has a much less heat than an oven. So for a kira, if you have a kira on a second floor, then all you need is a tefach of plaster to protect the floor. And in these cases, if it caused damage, he still has to pay, right? Let's say I live downstairs and someone else lives upstairs and I left the requisite for amot, but nevertheless, it caused damage, I still have to pay damage. I'm required to leave that amount of space, but I'm still liable. So you see, according to Tanakh Kama, one is liable no matter what. You're liable. Rabbi Shimon Omer, lo nemru shiurin halalu ela shim hizik patur milashalem. Rabbi Shimon, however, says, no, well, what's the point of giving you numbers if you're liable anyway? Rather, these measurements were given so that if you follow the measurements and nevertheless it causes damage, you don't have to pay. So you see that according to this, Rabbi Shimon does have a maximum after which you're not liable. So this seems to go against the Mishnah that says Shalem Yeshalem, which sounded like no matter what. So our answer is Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Abba, bar Abu, Hakol Lefi Goba Hadeleka. Pay attention to those words which were in the Mishnah. He's not saying there's no maximum. He's saying that it depends on the height of the fire. So you have to assess yourself. I can't give you one number fits all. 16 amot, 50 amot, 137 amot. It depends. Are you making a little barbecue? Are you making a huge bonfire? Are you making Burning Man? Is it going to spread? So you have to figure it out yourself. What the ratio is, what kind of oven this is, a giant oven, a small oven, what is it, what are they made out of, how much space are you leaving? So therefore there is in fact a maximum, but it depends on each situation, but in the situation of the oven. So Rabbi Shimon says if it's a typical oven and you have a typical plaster and all that, so 4 amot would be sufficient, 9 tefachim would be sufficient, as opposed to Tanakh Kama that says you're always liable. Amar Rav Yosef, Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, Halacha k'Rabbi Shimon, v'chein Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Shmuel, Halacha k'Rabbi Shimon. We have two traditions, both in the name of Shmuel the Amora that says Halacha follows Rabbi Shimon, that you have to assess how much space you need to leave according to the situation and the height of the fire. But there is, in fact, if you follow that maximum and you leave that amount, then and if the fire breaks out anyway, then you would not be liable. That brings us to the next Mishnah. Hamadlik et hagadish vehayu bo kelim vedalku. Rabbi Yehuda omer meshalem ma shebetocho. Hachamim omerim eno meshalem ela gadish shel chitin o shel seorin. We already referred to this machloket, but here is the source. If I light fire to someone else's wheat or barley stack, and turns out there were some vessels that were hidden inside, and they also got burnt, according to the Biyuda, I have to pay also for that which is concealed inside the grain. Hachamim, however, say, I do not have to pay for that which is concealed within the wheat or the barley. It's true, I was negligent with fire, and I saw some grain over there, but I figured, okay, I'll have to pay, worse comes to worse. If my fire gets out of control, I'll have to pay for the wheat, I'll have to pay for the barley. How was I supposed to know that you hid inside some expensive items? Not liable for that. Hayagidi kafut lo ve'ayved samuch lo ve'nisraf imo chayav. Ayved kafut lo gidi samuch lo ve'nisraf imo patur. Since we talked about one thing getting burnt because it's near another, in this case hidden in another, we give another case We're also, one thing gets burnt when it's next to something else. So if there was a goat that was tied to a stack of grain, and there was also a slave nearby, but the slave was not tied up, and I was negligent, and my fire burnt all three, I am liable to pay for the goat and for the grain, but I am not liable for the death of the slave, because the slave was not bound up. It should have run away. He's a human being. He has intelligence. He could see that there's fire there. And so it's his own fault that he didn't run away. However, if the slave is bound there to the grain, and there's a goat nearby, and they all get burnt up together, including the slave, and the slave was, since the slave was bound up and could not have run away, then I am liable to murder. Since I'm liable to murder, kimle b'drabamine, I only get the more severe punishment, which is capital punishment, and therefore I do not have to pay for the goat or the grain. Now back to the Biyuda, umodim chachamim l'Rabbi Yehuda. It's curious that it goes on a tangent to this other case, and then it comes back to a comment limiting this machloket, umodim hachamim l'Rabbi Yehuda b'madlikat habira, shum mishalem kol ma shebetocha sheken derech ben adam laniach bebatim. Even though hachamim said that for fires, you do not, I'm not responsible for that which is concealed. That's only talking about a case of a grain. But if it was a building that I set on fire, then I am liable to pay everything that's inside the building, even though it's inside and you can't see it, because that's the usual way of people to put things in houses, right? They put all their stuff in houses. So therefore, if I am negligent and I let my fire go and burn their house down, obviously I have to pay for everything in the house, because I can expect that there's lots of stuff in the house. But if I'm negligent and let my fire go and burn down your wheat pile, well, then I didn't expect anything else to be there. People don't usually put stuff inside a wheat pile, and therefore I'm not obligated in that case. Good. Rav Kana has another limitation on the machloket. And he says that the machloket between Rabbi Yehuda and Chachamim is only when I light the fire in my own property, so I'm, you know, more somewhat responsible. And then it got out of hand because I was negligent, and it goes and into someone else's property. That's where the Rabbi Yehuda mechayev and nizkei tamun be'esh rabbanan patre. That's where Rabbi Yehuda would say, I'm liable to everything that's hidden, and a banan say I'm not liable, right? Because I lit it in my own property, and okay, I was negligent, and it burned down your storehouse of wheat, so I'll pay for the wheat only. But if I go into your field and start a fire in your property, and it burns down whatever, your wheat pile, then I am liable for everything that's inside it, because that's a lot worse, a lot more worse than negligent, that to go and trespass, start a fire in your property, there for sure I am liable. So that's Rav Kana who's interpreting Rabbanan to be more stringent if the fire is in someone else's property, is lit there. Rava rejects Rav Kana and says, and he argues, if so, that the rabbis were limited in this way, and they only gave their leniency if he lit it in his own property, but not if he lit it in someone else's property, then the sefa of the Mishnah should have mentioned that, right? But instead of mentioning in the sefa the more far away case, right, the case that's not more different from this, which is that it says that Chachamim agreed with Rabbi Yehuda, if I burn down a house, I have to pay everything in it, because people usually put things in houses. So why are you switching from a case of grain and something hidden in the grain to a house, which is a completely different case? Why not stick with the grain and give a distinction within that? If I started the fire on my property, then Chachamim say goes into your property and burns down the grain, I only pay for the grain but not something hidden in it. But when is that true? Only if I started it within my own property and it went and destroyed your property, I don't have to pay for that which is hidden. But if I started the the fire in your property, then everybody would agree, even Chachamim, that I have to pay for everything in it. And you could have stuck with the same case regarding the pile of grain instead of having to bring in a totally new case about a house. So therefore, Ela Amar Avadava has his own interpretation of the Mishnah that partially includes what Rav Kahana, but doesn't go to that such a far extent. In fact, Rabbi Yehuda and Chachamim are arguing on two different points. Pelige b'madlik betoch shelo v'alcha v'achla betoch shel chabero. Rabbi Yehuda mechayev atamun be'esh v'debanan sabre la'mechayev. Okay, the basic machloket is if I, the beginning of the Mishnah, is if I light the fire in my own property and then it goes and spreads into someone else's property, and that's where Rabbi Yehuda says, I'm liable for everything, even that which is concealed. And Rabbi Rabbanan say, I am not liable. Okay, good. So far, so good. And so far, that agrees with Rav Kahana. Here's the difference. Now, within my friend's property, unlike Rav Kahana that said, if I lit it in the friend's property, everyone agrees I'm liable to everything. No. Even there is a difference between the two opinions. Whereas, according to the Biuda, I am liable to everything in it, even if it's a purse of money concealed within the stack, which is an unusual thing. People don't usually put their wallets in a stack, but nevertheless, I am liable. And so, certainly, the Biuda says I'm liable even if I light in my own property, certainly here. But here, the Banan Sabri, Kelim Shadar Kanat Min Begadish, Kegon Morigin Nukle Bakar, Hud Meshalem, Kelim Shadar Kanat Min Begadish Lo Meshalem. But in that case, if I light the fire in your own property, only things that are usual to conceal inside a stack, like threshing tools, yokes, things that I'm using out in the field anyway, I don't want to leave them out in the open that anyone can come and steal it. I hide them. That's sufficient. So these are things that are usually are hidden. So you can expect that to be there. But items like a wallet that people don't usually do that, conceal their wallet in a haystack, then I don't have to pay for it. So the Mishnah, the actual case in the Mishnah is in a house. So that fits with this rule here, that if it's in a house, those are things, or everything in a house is something that you expect to be in a house. You have to expect that people put all their stuff in their house, and that's why one is obligated fully for things in the house, even according to Chachamim, Modim Chachamim, right? Because that would be in a case where I light the fire on your property and it burns down everything, burns down your house. I'm liable to everything in your house, just like it would be the same if it was a stack of grain and it was things that were usually found in the grain. So the Mishnah is demonstrating that principle, which would apply to both a grain stack for things that usually in it and a house for things usually in it. And it's the same principle. And so that explains the flow of the Mishnah. Tenora banan, hamadik et hagadish v'yubo kelim v'dalku. Rabbi Yehuda omer meshalem kol ma sheya betocho, v'chamim omrim eno meshalem ela gadish el chitin o gadish el seorin, v'ruin mekom kelim ke'ilu hu male tevua. This baraita expands a little bit on the Mishnah and says that if I light a pile of a grain, and there were other vessels in it, and they also got burned. The Yehuda says, I have to pay for everything that's in it. Chachamim say, I only have to pay for the pile of wheat or the pile of barley, and the space that was taken up by that vessel that was in it, I consider it as if the space was filled with grain. So I don't get off, I don't pay zero for it, right? If there was a box in there full of whatever, toys, and the box was 4x4, I have to make believe as if that box was filled with grain and pay that amount of grain, because that's what I would have assumed is in it just by looking at it from the outside. The Baraita continues, this is good. Here we have a Baraita that backs up the opinions of Rav Kahana and Rava before, that this machloket is limited to where I light it in my own property and it goes to someone else's property. But if I actually go and light the fire in my friend's property, I am liable for everything in it. This language, everything in it, sounds more like Rav Kahana. Rava would have to say that it means everything in it that is usually there. And finally, Moder Bi Yehuda, Hachamim Mashil Makom Lachavero Lehagdish Gadish, Vidgish Vitmin, Shen Meshalem Ela, Deme Hidgish, Hagadish Bilbad. But even Rabbi Yehuda, we saw a few ways how Rabbi Hanan agreed with Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda also would agree with Chachamim for leniency. If I lent space to you to put your grain in there. So I lent the space only for your grain. And you go and you not only put your grain, but you also hid valuable things in it. And then I cause a fire in my own property. In that case, even Rabbi Yehuda would agree, I only have to pay for the price of the grain because I only gave you permission to put grain there. I didn't say I wanted to, be responsible for your Ferrari that you decided to hide under the pile of grain. Ladgish chitin v'hidgish se'odin. Se'odin v'hidgish chitin. Chitin v'chipan be'se'odin. Se'odin v'chipan be'chitim. She'no mishalem ela deme se'odin bilbad. And Rabbi Yehuda furthermore agrees that if we agree that you're going to put wheat there, and then you put barley there, and then I burn it. I only have to pay for barley because that's what's actually there. And the other way around, we agreed that you could put your barley there, and then you put your wheat there, and I burn it down. Even though I only agreed for the barley, and so therefore I only, even though you put wheat there and I burnt down your wheat, I only agreed to watch your barley, so I don't have to pay any more than the agreement. If we agreed that you could put your wheat there, and you put your wheat there, but put some barley on top, so it looks like that's, you know, the wheat is concealed and the barley is on top, or the other way around, we agreed that you'd put barley, and you did put barley, but you covered it with wheat. In all those cases, I only have to pay for the value of barley, either because that's what actually was burned, or because that's all I agreed to in the first place. Baruch Adonai Leolam. Amen v'amen.